Welcome to the A-News Podcast. This is episode 51 for February 16, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually some good commentary, go to the nonsectariananarchistnews.org. Editorial: News, Fake News, and Silos. People hate the news media for good reason. When I was having my 5 minutes of fame, reporters staked out my house, harassed my neighbors, and finally resorted to asking my mail carrier about me. We all see reporters sticking mics into the faces of people who are devastated, and many of us have had our stories manipulated by reporters or editors to be something that we would disavow. I'm watching more news media now than I have ever before in my life. For a long time, I was one of those people who only got my news from The Daily Show back when that was still surprising. And I find myself now not trusting newscasters on either side of the news polarity. So I'm going further afield, not really looking for news anymore because it's always some stupid thing that might be horrible or might be taken out of context or both, or might be just another thing that news companies think will drive people to consume their product. My latest thing is a smart conservative analyst who is different enough for me that I don't think I'm going to be suckered. His assumptions are not mine, and I don't want to listen to people who validate what I already think. But I have a soft spot for print media, for newspapers and some magazines. I grew up on stories of valiant journalists fighting to get the truth out there in the face of big business, of threats to their body and their livelihood, and of public apathy. I knew people who looked on journalism as a calling, like being called to monasticism or something, who thought of publishing as an honorable palliative to endemic corruption. Woodward and Bernstein, Gary Webb, all the people working on the articles that are censored or papered over or just ignored. So now, when news is becoming decentralized, when people with big followings have as much influence as folks who have been journalists for decades, what's an anarchist to think? The whole freedom of speech thing has always been kind of contradictory. In the U.S., we have mostly the capacity to say what we want. The struggle is to stand out enough so that people notice what we have to say. That conservative I mentioned above pointed out last year that we are now all publishers, that it is standard for a teenager to have as many readers as a small-town newspaper at the turn of the century. So trust and exposure are the scarcity. How do we determine whether a news source is trustworthy? Everyone is biased. If something is officially published, it's adding the reporter's bias to the editor's bias to the publisher's bias. So many agendas to fulfill, and the one that is about making money is the one that rules them all. I know that there are still people out there treating reporting and journalism with the care and sincerity that so impresses me, and it makes sense to me that, like other things that are coming from the heart, those people wouldn't necessarily be paid for the important work that they do. But I guess I don't think that I'm necessarily going to find those people or be able to value them sufficiently if I did find them. Because how would I know what amazing work they're doing unless they're validated by other people who I trust? Silos, the way that we're funneled into only hearing things that support what we already think, are really scary to me these days. To bring it back to the concrete, this is the kind of thing that makes me appreciate projects like Wikipedia and Anarchist News. I like projects that allow comments, that encourage people to get involved and exchange perspectives, that allow people to air differences. Projects that celebrate different perspectives instead of only validating the writers of stories or pretending that we all agree.
Who made the man? Do what he can! Who made the man? Do what he can! Who made the man? Do what he can! Who made the man?
What's new this week? Salt Lake City, Capitol Hill spray painted in action for solidarity with bears' ears. From Anonymous. Quote, in the early morning of February 10th, 2018, the Salt Lake City Capitol Hill building near the east side steps was spray painted. Two messages showing clear from the street read, Solidarity, Circle A, and Solidarity with Bears' Ears. We maintain the resistance for protection of the wild. Industrial civilization as it exists is not sustainable. We oppose all authority as anarchists in the Salt Lake City community and demand respect deserved by all of the wild, unquote. Bears' Ears, for those who don't know, refers to a national monument in Utah, one of two that Trump announced will be shrunk.
A sobering look at the anti-fascist response at Red Square on February 10th from PugetSoundAnarchists.org. This is a retrospective on the response to a racist rally in Seattle on the University of Washington campus. Quote, "The alt-right has long ago proven their proclivity to violence. As such, dialogue and discussion should never be an option for anti-fascists. Videos from Saturday show multiple counter-protesters engaging in certainly well-intended, but ultimately futile attempts at reason with Kyle Broussard and others, who has been documented attacking anti-fascist protesters. Other videos show anti-fascists in black bloc attire standing directly in front of Proud Boys, simply filming them with their phone, only to have their phone knocked out of their hands and then their head knocked as well. Dialogue appeals to reason, and cameras have more often left us vulnerable to their violent assaults. The time is now to put down your camera and pick up your hands. One final note, pepper spray is not a magical chemical weapon that completely neutralizes your opponents, especially if they're wearing protective eyewear. If you whip out pepper spray and use it, please, comrades, be prepared to start swinging and or start running. What worked weeks ago are tactics we should move forward from and develop upon, not rely on tirelessly." Unquote.
Stolen comrades, Insoral Day, Scott O'Neill, and the unluckiest couple in the world. From Anonymous by Elorante. A snapshot of three anarchists from Uruguay in the 70s who disappeared. A mystery, a historic moment, a pause to reflect. Quote, "I find no desire for closure in this story. The fact that five human beings disappeared off the face of the earth requires no ending, no odes, no requiem. What does need to be said, however, is that in the case of the three comrades, they fought back hard, all their lives and to the end of their lives." Unquote.
Berlin, Germany, "We are all terrorists. Solidarity with anarchist prisoners in Russia," from Insurrection News. Quote, from Rigaer Street, "We send signs of solidarity and rage to anarchist prisoners in Russia, responding to the call from Russia for International Days of Solidarity with Russian anarchist political prisoners. These days, we heard from the arrests of anti-fascists and anarchists in Russia. Already before, in the months of October and November 2017, in the city of Penza, six people got arrested and brutally tortured by the Federal Secret Service, FSB. In January this year, in the city of St. Petersburg, a second wave of arrests followed, with two persons first being kidnapped by the FSB for one day and only the day after being officially registered in remand prison. The Secret Service's offensive, led by Putin's regime, was accompanied by house raids in different cities of the country. As a reason for the repression, the FSB constructed an anarchist terrorist group named, quote, NET, planning a series of attacks on the presidential elections in March 2018, as well as on the World Cup in June-July 2018 in Russia, leading to armed insurrection, and which is supposed to exist in several cities of Russia and Belarus. There is no evidence proving the real existence of the group. The only evidences used are the statements of the arrested, which the FSB extorted from the prisoners using torture and the threat of further acts of torture. In Penza, the group got constructed by the statements of the first arrested person. The link between the members of the group is having played airsoft games together. Except for this first person who got released beginning of the year into house arrest, all the others are still kept in the remand prison," unquote.
Anarchists Yelena Gorban and Alexei Kobaidze, suspects in vandalism committed outside of United Russia office, are sent to the temporary detention facility. From autonomen.org, more information about the bad behavior of Russian cops, with links to other stories on the same theme. Prepare for police misconduct, folks. Practice so you are as ready as you can be.
Athens, anarchist comrade Grigoris Tironis is free from the house arrest, from Act for Freedom Now. A brief update on the situation of Tironis, nominally arrested for bank robbery. Quote, "The Athens Appeals Court today accepted the application of anarchist comrade Grigoris Tironis, with which he asked for the replacement of his house arrest. Thus, the conditions were replaced with a ban from leaving the country. He's also banned from leaving the region of South Attica. He has to remain at the address given as his permanent residence. He cannot spend the night away from this residence and must appear at the police station in his area every 5 days. Grigoris was released after the 18-month pre-trial detention period had expired. on December 7th, 2017, and in a further outburst of judicial arbitrariness, they imposed an innovative condition of house arrest, unquote.
Coping with the end of the world, from Plain Words out of Minneapolis. This piece takes the thing that tons of people are talking about, from the nightly news to Jones or Zan, and says something interesting about it. Quote, a trend that exploits people's unfulfilled desires to have meaningful connections was replaced by a trend that tiptoes lightheartedly around people's fears of a disastrous future. While the cope-baiting is most obvious in the latter, in both cases, the target of the advertisements is someone trying to deal with the miserable life they're stuck in. To cope implies a degree of successfully persevering through the situation. What about when you cannot? When you lack the ability to both change a situation or deal with it in your life? Hopelessness is significantly related to eventual suicide by psychiatrists, and suicide rates have been on the rise across demographics of age and gender. It is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. If suicide is related to coping, is it linked to a failure to cope, or is it actually a rejection of coping as a way of living? Random mass shootings are also on the rise. These seemingly arbitrary acts are hard to understand, but the absence of empathy points to a lack of connection with people, and the suicidal intentions behind them demonstrates a feeling of hopelessness, unquote.
A New Luddite Rebellion from Gods and Radicals by Reed Wildermuth, who continues to bring poignant reflections on modern life to the mix. This piece starts out with a memory of a friend who could not decide on a restaurant without validation from a gadget. I appreciate how Reed frequently starts his articles with concrete examples from his experience. Quote, we do not revolt because we might fail. People might get shot or imprisoned. Vulnerable people might suffer more than they already do. Police oppression might increase, and all that effort could be wasted forever. And though these fears have always been good fears, our reliance on technology for reassurances of certainty has amplified our inaction. This is not a controversial statement. If many of us can barely try out a new restaurant without relying on smartphones to take away the very minimal risk of an awful meal, why would we expect ourselves to face actual, real risk? Unquote.
The Archive of Terror, Mundane Denunciations, from Anonymous by Ellerante. The second piece by Ellerante this week, this one is about the banality of evil, to borrow a phrase. Quote, then the realization, the system, how it works, peeks out from behind the memos, the denunciations, the reports, the interrogations, and its defining characteristic, its distinguishing mark, is how dreary it all is. The banality of denunciation after denunciation, the day-to-day reality of writing up the agenda of meetings, a discussion in a classroom, the content of a conversation with a taxi driver. There's a painful sense of the commonplace, to the point of boredom. These weren't secret agents tracking revolutionaries in the rain. This was the next-door neighbor, the work colleague, the owner of the corner store, the cousin, the professor, sending in unsolicited reports to the police. The cop in everyone's head. Unquote.
Who's afraid of the big bad anarchist rejecting left unity and raising hell in radical geography? From Institute for Anarchist Studies by Simon Springer. This starts out with a criticism of Marx that made me look forward positively to reading this, but the bulk of the piece is the author complaining about not being treated well by a non-anarchist Marxist professor. Per the usual with other people's drama, it's just not that entertaining if you have no vested interest and don't know or know whether to trust the participants. I mean, sure, I'll go with the anti-Marx anarchist over the Marxist non-anarchist, but it's not much deeper than picking sides because you like the color of the uniform. They're both academics and hence, ultimately, not particularly trustworthy. Quote, I never thought I would actually write these words, but here they are. David Harvey is afraid of me. He's afraid of all anarchists, theoretically deficient, dogmatic fools that he assumes we all are. Why else would he start something that he's not prepared to finish? As the anarchist turn in academia has started to take hold, within geography in particular, Harvey has recoiled in fear of Marxism losing the unconditional veneration he believes it deserves, unquote.
Santiago, Chile, noise bombs in solidarity with imprisoned anarchist comrades Ignacio, Kevin, and Joaquin. From Insurrection News, a short communique. Quote, Wednesday, February 7th, we continue with our custom of mocking the authorities. Vandalism as an action, as an expression of rage against the sick society and its sad infrastructure. As we have previously stated, quote, the streets of Santiago at night are ours when we decide to indulge in the luxury of vandalizing its symbols. And so we did it again, placing 3 noise bombs, this time under cars, inside a Mormon church, and a few steps from the home of a drug-dealing bastard. We caused a bit of disorder on the periphery of the streets. Without a doubt, we will certainly go for more, unquote.
A radical performance in solidarity with repressed Russian anarchists was organized in Toronto. Mostly this is a list of things to do to support folks in Russia. Quote, help to spread the word. Share this post. Read other articles in English about this case. Spread it on social media. Let your friends and comrades know about repressions against Russian anarchists. We have seen that even in Russia, public attention can really help to cut down the prison sentences. It's also great psychological support for our comrades who are isolated from the outside world and need to know that they are not forgotten. One, donate for lawyers. We remind that legal help is needed to pay the work of lawyers who defend our comrades. 2, write letters to our comrades in jail, unquote.
Media, here's the fucking news. 6 minutes. Quote, in this pilot episode of the fucking news, Stim interviews far-right YouTube troll El Chico Lobo and covers the alt-right's pitiful attempt to hold a picnic in Chicano Park, plus some good old-fashioned riot porn from Italy. This is Submedia coming out of retirement.
Podcasts. 2 Paychecks, podcast number 3. Hex on Restorative Justice, part 2. 1 hour and 9 minutes. Self-identified leftist anarchists. Hex has a lot to say about cops and fascists and a lot of confidence about how to say it. He could stand to say right a bit less, but you know. Quote, this is part 2 of our interview with Hex, an activist and member of the General Defense Committee, who the alt-right tried to murder on Inauguration Day outside of a Milo Yiannopoulos event. Quote, this is part 2 of our interview with Hex, an activist and member of the General Defense Committee, who the alt-right tried to murder on Inauguration Day outside of a Milo Yiannopoulos event. Here he continues talking about his feelings of restorative justice, but also gets into anarchist tactics and how radicals can use public records requests to their advantage, unquote. If your tolerance is high for a dude proclaiming, then this podcast might be entertaining and or educational for you. There is some tactical thinking here.
The Iconocast, episode 70, 1 hour and 2 minutes. This starts out as an explanation of Anabaptists and minor notes on their significance to anarchist thought or history. Community and accountability are heavily referenced. Beth Roy is a sociologist and has written a book on the murder by cop of West Guinean Amadou Diallo, and another on race and class in Bernal Heights, a neighborhood in San Francisco. This conversation for the Iconocast podcast is nominally anarchist, from far outside of anything I know as the anarchist milieu, and within, instead, an activist restorative justice scene, which might make it more interesting for some and less for others.
The Hotwire, number 18, February 14th, 2018, 35 minutes, quote, there is Antifa activity in Olympia, Athens, and Seattle. Vanessa Hobson died while in the custody of Olympia police, and we report on the death and the subsequent protests. There are strikes by delivery drivers across Hong Kong and Europe, by prisoners detained at an immigrant detention center in Washington, and walkouts across the country as part of the Fight for 15 campaign. We interview an anarchist active in the resistance to the Westlake landfill. In honor of Valentine's Day, there's a rant against conventional love, unquote.
Anarchy Radio, February 14th, 2018. 1 hour. There is nothing different in this episode.
Black and Green, podcast number 1. 1 hour and 24 minutes. This seems to be a podcast for Kevin to talk about his projects, where they're at, why they haven't happened yet, what they'll be when they do happen. 1.5 hours seems like a long time for that. Just saying. He's doing a lot of stuff, including making leather, disliking philosophy, and liking godless spirituality. This seems like a perfectly appropriate project for KT. If you like his writing, you'll undoubtedly enjoy the podcast.
Topic of the week. Anarchist by any other name. There is a tension between people who don't would never call themselves an anarchist, but agree with some anarchist principles, and people who own the label. Projects like CrimeThink have perfected the naming of things as anarchist when some would call those things simple human behavior, like making and eating meals with friends, etc. Obviously, the main point of this sort of practice is to demystify anarchy and anarchists, to put the bomb throwing in a larger, less scary context, or to negate the scary bits altogether. Part of the point of anarchy is that it's, in fact, normal behavior in some ways for people. So is this the interesting part of it for you? What have you opted to make anarchy sound friendly? When have you opted? Sorry, that makes more sense. When has it worked better to keep it scary? Which do you tend towards? Who is the biggest non-anarchist influence on your anarchy? I think mine was Bertrand Russell, but it's been a long time.
To answer the last question first, the situationists.
Right, sure.
Who, and it was so early and in my entire journey that I didn't understand that they weren't anarchists at the time.
Right.
Which I think is actually fairly common.
I had a very long conversation in bits and pieces over multiple days with my grandfather many years ago about anarchy and made it sound, I did the very simple version, the no government, no intrusion, other people not making choices for you thing, because I really wanted it to make sense to him. I don't think it was even about it not being dangerous or being safe, but I just wanted it to fit in his worldview. He's very important to me. I think it's the only time I've ever really gone out of my way to make it sound safe. I have a cluster of children in my life, my little cousins, and they were all probably in their mid-teens at the time. I had a conversation with them about it where I dumbed it down a lot, but I don't even think then it was about it being safe. It was just about them understanding it, because they literally started out the conversation by asking me who the god of anarchy was, because, you know, they were 12 and from the Midwest, so what else did they have?
Who's your Jesus?
Right, exactly. If you don't believe in Jesus, then who's Jesus?
Yeah.
Okay, well, no. As for the rest of the question, I think I don't talk about anarchy because I like that it's dangerous, but more what I like is that it's unrealistic, that it's not simple, that it's impossible, that we are asking for everything and, you know, on some grounds, not willing to compromise that asking. And that's always what drew me in originally. It was always what's exciting to me. And coming out of liberal politics and being, after especially getting older and understanding the history better, being so disappointed in the actual outcome of the civil rights movement, thinking that there was this whole world of people who weren't going to take what they could get, they're going to take nothing and look till they could get exactly what they wanted. That was really exciting for me. Yeah. I don't know. I'll think about the rest. What about you?
Well, I think that for me, you know, my best, most positive definition of anarchy is that it's an evolving story. And, you know, so obviously I spent a lot of time thinking and talking about how anarchism has changed since the end of the Spanish Civil War. But for me, anarchy begins, and, you know, my greatest non-anarchist influence are the 500 nations of pre-contact Native Americans. And so for me, this entire conversation is basically the idea that, of course, it would only be by a highly attenuated definition of anarchism that world, that you know, pre-contact Native America could be defined as anarchism. But if I were going to talk about an anarchism that I would desire, it would look very similar to that world. In other words, it could very well be that my neighbors down the way organize themselves in a way that's not explicitly anarchist. Or to put it differently, one of the things that I'm the most hostile towards when I hear someone argue for like a red anarchist position is the idea that a future world would ever have one system at all.
Right.
The idea that anarchism is one story that everyone will bow beneath, to me, is it's not just that it's the opposite of anarchism, but to me it's the opposite of what I want. I want radically different ways to solve the same types of problems, because I think that that is in fact the I'm going to say something I never would say otherwise, but I feel like that is the natural order of things, which is that we create worlds in our own images, and having the power to do that, and the power to do that without the, you know, the oppression of singular solutions like the monopoly of violence that the state has, or the logic of extraction of value of every human living thing that capitalism and exchange relationships have, to me, it would restart a conversation where we actually could impact the answer to the question. And so for me, you know, this idea that anarchism is this European ideology that we're all basically subject to, you know, that's the not anarchist principle. And so in this way, you know, I guess my desire would be to define anarchism as by not its name. And that, yeah. that anarchism is that empty space
yeah.
where a world of many possibilities could fill.
Yeah, I think that is why Bolo Bolo spoke to me so much, because I really like the idea that, you know, if we ever get to a better world, it's going to be full of all kinds of people who aren't anarchists, who aren't my people. And I want everyone to get to live the way that they want to live. And I want to have to not be anywhere near them if, you know, if the way they want to live is not what I'm interested in. And I don't want other people's visions to be foisted upon me. And I don't want to have to fight with you about it. And so the notion that, you know, that kind of like shake out of a self-selecting, these are my people, these are the things that we want. And if it's not what you want, then you just go find your people. That's very, that feels like anarchy to me.
I mean, I think that the challenge here is this idea that, you know, I actually don't like the fact that crime think was mentioned in this topic of the week, because I'm not sure that the crime think of today is the same crime think that they're sort of referring
sure.
to. And so, you know, one of the things I would say about those who participate in the politics of the real, you know, which I'll include street activism as sort of being a way of participating in the politics of the real,
mm-hmm.
is not only do I feel like that limits sort of like the your capacity to have an interesting vision about a future world. But I, on this level, I do fundamentally think that the anarchist project is to destroy the existing order,
right.
full stop. That's as much as any of us should be involved as, you know, again, in my humble opinion, that's how much any of us should be involved in politics as it exists today, is to utterly destroy it, to befuddle it, to frustrate and denature it.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically any other sort of politic, any sort of like expression of a platform that you're against, to me, is engagement in the politics of the real. And yeah, I just don't think that that's part of the anarchist project.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I also understand why it's tempting to call having a potluck with your friends anarchist.
Sure. It is totally a different sort of a project. In other words, like the idea of having a word be sort of socially acceptable
mm-hmm.
is, you know, like I guess I'm happy to speak of anarchism in epic terms.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're referring to is sort of not referring to anarchism in epic terms.
Sure.
Which, you know, I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. I mean, I've had this discussion in the past with many people that one of the trends, one of the first things I noticed as a trend was, especially here in the Bay Area, people labeling the things they like as anarchist. And I would find myself then looking for the sources that this comes out of something anarchist and not finding it and being confused. So the big one, the first one I encountered in the Bay was the community of bicycles and bicycling and bicycles are revolutionary, which I get that. And that the world of bicycling and being against cars and all of this is anarchist. And I found that really confusing.
Sure.
And then, oh, it's because this is really important to you. This is kind of the core of your belief, and you are an anarchist. So then this is anarchist for you. And it irritated me at first, but over the years, Yeah, I guess I'm less of a hardliner about it. I guess I care less.
I mean, this is, you know, there's a couple of different conversations that actually we're even having here. You know, like, again, I've expressed my sort of definition of anarchism within the context of being a person who's sort of dedicated my life to this particular idea.
Sure.
Whereas really what you're talking about is to the extent to which I live in a social environment that is not necessarily anarchists or not necessarily people who are devoting their life to this crazy thing to the extent to which I am. They might self-identify as anarchists, but they're not dedicating their life to, you know, to Mother Anarchy. Those people, like, how does one interact and engage with those people without sounding like a crazy person all the time?
Sure.
And I sort of have picked the crazy person option.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand you picked the crazy person option.
You have less so.
I have.
You're less crazy than I am.
I'm not so sure that's true, but I don't think that's the point. I'm trying to pay attention to the question is asking a couple different questions.
Yes, for sure.
And the question is kind of wrapping this all up as in, like, these are all in a line and they go together. And that's actually not true. I also always have Audrey in my head.
For those of you who are not familiar, Audrey was a black diaper baby who we were really lucky to spend a decade, the last decade of her life with. She was a weekly attendee to the anarchist study group, and her parents were radicalized by the Haymarket incident of the late 19th century, and she was in her 90s when she passed.
So Audrey told me a story about an argument that she had with her ex-partner, who passed a couple years after her, where he expressed to her how proud he was that after all these years, they had, like, held it down as anarchists. And Audrey went to the study group for years, and Audrey self-identified as an anarchist until the day that she died. And but her response to him is, what the hell are you talking about? I live my life. I pay my taxes. I, you know, follow laws and follow the rules. I hang out with my friends. A lot of my friends are anarchists, but I don't know what you mean when you say that. So it was interesting to me that some sort of insane, crazy, large gesture of anarchy wasn't necessary for her. Now, she had done some amazing things in her life at various points in her life. There's a story that anybody in the anarchy world has heard some version of, where she basically lied to and thwarted her parents so she could take a long trip and go see Emma Goldman. But for her, living the life that she lived was her anarchist life. And it didn't have to look like anything else to be an anarchist life.
Sure.
And I don't know what it means to do this for 90 years. So I want to respect that. And so I'm thinking about that as I'm thinking about parts of the answer to the question. Now, there is a part of me that is the crazy you. And if I could have what I want, and yeah. I don't know. I feel like I'm becoming incoherent. That's just what's going through my head.
Well, I think that's, and Audrey's story is always a great way to conclude this conversation.
Always.
So, thank you very much.
Thanks.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, it was sound edited by Lino Mabel, written by Jackie. The editorial was written by Chisel. Produced and narrated by Chisel and a friend, we thank Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more about anarchy, books, pamphlets, and other anarchist material are at littleblackcart.com, and news and up-to-the-minute commentary are at anarchistnews.org.